when you first approached me.
No, you approached me.
I approached you. That's right.
You came to me because you had been following me.
Yeah, I'd been stalking her.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Rachel Tipton, mom, realtor, and creator of The Closing Curve.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. Hey, Rach, my girl, what's up?
Hi. Everything is good. I have a confession to make.
What? Confessions by Rachel.
Yeah.
What's up?
So once upon a time, my daughter did a presentation in front of her entire classroom and pointed out that mommy's favorite food is tagalongs, which is true.
Okay.
And so I have some tagalongs that I bought the other day and put them in the freezer with the plan of not eating them until after a certain day.
What?
Well,
what?
Well,
I just saw you 2 days ago.
Well, I broke down and opened them for Roxy because she wanted some in her lunch.
Excuse.
And I just ate some this morning. And you know what my reasoning was?
Your excuse? What?
Yeah, it was that I worked out twice yesterday and a couple of these won't hurt because I'm working out again later today. But it's bullshit. It's a fail. But I just wanted to put that out there because there's so many people out there that are trying to like stick to their goals, especially when it comes to like not eating tagalong specifically or like being on a diet. And everybody fails, even me, especially where tagalongs are concerned.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the only thing that really disappoints me about this is the fact that you denied me tagalongs a few days ago when I saw you face to face and we were recording.
They weren't open yet.
And you denied me. I even asked for a box to take with me.
I actually was going to give you a box, but you ran out in a rush because you had somewhere to be. I really was like, I should give up mother tagalongs
to give to Keith, the world. To give to Keith, who's yet to buy Girl Scout cookies this year.
Man, and they're so good. They're so good.
And okay. Keith has a lot of money to spend on Girl Scout cookies. He's told us about this. Money is just burning a hole in his pocket.
I know. If a Girl Scout knew that there was a man standing before her with 50 bucks in his pocket, willing to spend all 50 on Girl Scout cookies, they would be asking for the sale. And yet the problem is that they're not. And that's just
a travesty. When Keith offered us money, I was like, yeah.
Hell yeah.
And we didn't give him any cookies.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup. I have two more unopened boxes. And I know because I've done like literally it feels like a drug deal out buying cookies out of the back of a soccer mom's minivan in recent years. Like, I know you're holding. Meet me out behind the school just before carpool and I'll buy a case. That's a true story.
Oh my gosh, you are really a mobster. That's why we get along, because that's how my dad did it. I got a thing on the back of my truck. Meet me in the alley.
Yeah.
It's a toaster.
Who's holding?
Well, maybe you could stop by and bring me a box and then take the table with you for our podcasting, and then I'll bring the box. I'm just throwing it out there, and then I can give a box to Keith when I see him.
I do need to do that. I do need to come get the table. And right. I do need to get rid of the tagalongs.
Yes.
Because clearly I can't be trusted with them. Like, I think actually it's kind of a win that I lasted more than 24 hours with them in the house. It should never happen.
All right. Well, anyways,
this has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about.
No. I'm not judging you because I love you. I'm just upset that I didn't get any of those cookies. So... Anywho, I don't really have anything to confess today. We have because we record several episodes in a day, sometimes we have recorded an episode, I don't know, to play either before this or after this, who knows, where we've already had my confessional moment of the day about procrastination of writing a book. So we don't need to beat that dead horse again. What I'm working on today is preparing to travel because I'm about to go on my major travel extravaganza going from city to city to city. So my upcoming travel schedule is...
Okay. Gina on tour.
Gina on tour. So Dallas, Orlando, back to Dallas, Omaha, back to Dallas, Birmingham, Alabama, Chicago, Nashville, Lincoln, Nebraska. That's my upcoming travel itinerary. And then maybe back to Dallas. All roads seem to lead to Dallas. Anyway, because when I go on some of these long stints, I have to truly be fully prepared because I'm like on the road. So I need to bring everything possible I need to bring with me, especially from a sales perspective. So I thought today's topic could be about preparation and education. And I add the education piece of it because some of what you're going through right now that goes hand in hand with preparation is educating our customers and clients on the process of what it is that they want to buy from us. So I think there's that preparation and education kind of go hand in hand. How's that sound to you?
Definitely agree. I am preparing to, once we're done with this podcast, to go show property to some folks, some buyers. And what I have found is a lot of buyers that don't understand fully the process. And really, frankly, most buyers don't understand the process because most people don't purchase a new home,
right?
Except for, you know, every 5 or 10 years. So within those timeframes, I mean, 10 years ago, the home buying process was incredibly different than it is now. So everybody is a little bit in the dark unless they're doing it every day, like myself, selling homes. So it's a big educational piece almost all the time to remind people, okay, so if you want to see a home where there's people that live there, you really should give them the courtesy of 24 hours and not 1 hour. And it doesn't halt people from doing it. They do it anyway. They you know, it happens. But just simple things that I understand because I do this every day, that I have to have patience and empathy for people, especially my clients, to educate them in how it works, but not down these people because they don't know, because they just don't know what they don't know. And this is what I do. So I really take the stance that everyone is a, kind of a first-time home buyer because... they don't do it every day. And so I really like to take that educational standpoint of explaining to people how things can be done, because education is power. Information is power, that is. And if people understand better, then the whole process goes more smoothly.
So it depends on what it is that people, for our warners, for our listeners, if you're in the sales arena and you're selling, some of you may be selling to first-time buyers of some type or not. And I know that we talked about this with Keith at some point on, there are professional buyers out there, right? They're in procurement. Their job is to, they're in purchasing, their job is to buy. And so they might be 100% educated on buying and they're actually trained to be buying. But a lot of our customers and clients out there, for our listeners and for ourselves, are first-time buyers, right? Like in the training arena, a lot of times the people who are hiring us to do training, they've never hired anybody to do training. And that was something that I've had to learn to qualify those buyers, because the buyer who's never ever brought in a training company, I have to do a little more work, especially in the sell, because it's so new to them that I have to realize they don't know what they don't know. And so there's more work in the education process up front. So which goes hand in hand with the preparation part of it. And you need to be truly prepared in knowing your shit. You need to be able to really know what it is you do. And if you're a newer salesperson, you might not be 100% there yet. And that's okay. That's part of your learning curve. But you have to be able to educate And in order to do that, you have to prepare for it.
Right. And be prepared for pushback from folks like the people you were just talking about, the buyers, because a lot of times, and we've just talked about this in a previous episode, the default answer is no. Because
yeah.
If someone's a buyer and they have an allotted budget that they have to stick to, unless they really think something's spectacular over the top, they're going to say no because they're withholding their budget. And they just, if you're prepared for pushback, then you can look at it as a little bit more of a game. The negotiation is a game. And how can I show my value? And how can I present it in a way that they can see that they really need it? Because they don't know what they don't know, as you said.
It's kind of interesting because I'm thinking about this in hindsight, because I'm thinking about a certain situation that came up recently, and I don't think I've mastered this. So I'm always up to being educated by others. There are prospects out there that will see me speak at an event and then become enamored and be like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what we need for our company, right? So that's a buying cue. Like, you're so excited that like they completely resonate. They see your value. They want to bring you in. They reach out to you and engage in a conversation. This recently happened. You're exactly what we need. We want to bring you in to do X, Y, and Z, and we think you could do it. And then you start having the money conversation, and they're like, oh. And we've talked about this before. It was a nonprofit. They're like, oh, we're a nonprofit. We don't have that kind of money. And now I think about it, because I have to continue my follow-up with her. Like, I need to educate her. Like, she's not necessarily the head of the nonprofit. She's a person working there. She may not realize that nonprofit is simply a tax structure. Somewhere there's a budget. They're just not used to spending money. So she sees the value, but she can't figure out how to put the value together with the, it's not on the budget line for us to do this.
Well, and if people can see the value in something, they will always find the money.
Mm.
They will. Oh, I know. And you know that because just in the very beginning of our relationship together, Gina, when Gina approached
me, one of my favorite,
guys,
you know what? That story is going in my book.
It should go in the book. So Gina approached me, and I think we've told the story before, but I'll tell it again quickly, that when you first approached me,
No, you approached me.
I approached you. That's right.
You came to me because you had been following me.
Yeah, I'd been stalking her. And you, when you dropped the price, I was like, oh, I don't have that money. And then when I thought about it for a few days, I had just allotted almost that same amount of money, actually, to another project. And I was able to see the value in what you were offering. And so I got myself out of that obligation and I allotted the money over to you. But my initial reaction was, oh, I don't have that money and I can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, there's 100 stories out there you can find of people that say, oh, I didn't have the money. It was my last $500 for so-and-so training course or seminar or whatever. And I invested in it. It was the best thing I ever did. And then their whole life changes. So sometimes, you know, people, when they see the value of something that they really need, they will find the money. They will find it somewhere. It's just a matter of money likes direction. So it's just deciding that that's the direction that people want to go with.
People always find the money for the things that they need and they want. And I am such an example of buying things that I really can't afford because I really want it. Like moving into a new place, like My I should post these pictures. So I had a couple pieces of furniture redone and it wasn't cheap to do it. And I really couldn't afford it at this moment in time with a bunch of expenses, but I'm like, but it happened. I made it happen. I have some real, my office furniture is sweet because it was all refinished and distressed and pink and it's the mini she shed now called the Ocean Office. I found the money.
Yep. You always find the money for the things that we all always find the money for the things that are important. And that's it's interesting when people, it really bugs me. It bothers me a lot when I'm around folks that they're like, oh, I just don't have the money. I'm broke. And that's a story that we tell ourselves. Yeah. And then that becomes our reality. And trust me, I've been there. I used to be that person that said, oh, God, I don't have the money. And now I'm very careful about that train of thought, or especially speaking that reality out into the world. Even when my bank account is running kind of low, I still won't use that language, because everybody has something that their money goes to. Some people will claim that they're broke and they never have any money, but yet they have this habit of smoking cigarettes. Those things are so expensive. So that means you're not broke. You know, if you have a car and you're putting gas in it, you're not broke.
If you're going to Starbucks every day, you're not broke.
Yeah. And it's just money likes direction. And I get that a lot from people, is they will say, I've taken Roxy to Disney World like once a year, almost her whole life. Like, I've taken her a lot of times because we love to do that. And the reason that I do that is because I work very hard. I'm almost always constantly working, and I always like to have something that's just, you know, for us, that she knows that is for her. And it's also one way for me to say, mommy's working very hard because I want to be able to really have a great trip with you. And so she understands, it's something tangible that she understands, that I'm working hard so that I can provide great experiences for her. But I like to travel, and that's where my money goes. I don't shop very much. I don't drink. I don't go out and do stuff, like, because I like to travel, and that's where
my money goes.
My money likes that direction. So you choose where your money goes. We all choose where our money goes. And it's easy to have these habits, these little habits that we don't want to admit. And it's drip. One year I looked at, I was in the habit of going to Starbucks a lot. And it was a couple years ago, and I pulled out my bank account or my bank statements, and I looked and added up how much money I was spending monthly on it. And I was shocked, and immediately I stopped doing that. It was like $100 a month.
Oh, okay.
Which some people may think is not a lot, but at the time it was a lot. For me, it was a lot at that time. And now I changed my viewpoint on Starbucks, as it's not a habit anymore. It's kind of more like a treat. It's not the norm. It's when so I'm actually appreciate it more, and I have my specific drink that I love. So I don't have it all the time.
Well, my good news is that I don't live like close, like easily accessible to a Starbucks anymore, like I used to. So I used to have like the Starbucks that was like I could walk to. I mean, it was an 8-block walk, but that was how I got myself walking. I was like, I'll walk to Starbucks and back, or the Starbucks that I went to like office at sometimes. But there's really like nothing super close unless I go to the Starbucks that's at the Kroger, which is not to me a real Starbucks. I like corporate owned Starbucks. If anybody knows me, that's a whole nother topic.
There's one over by Home Depot by you.
Yeah, but I feel like it's so far because it's like on the by.
Oh my God. You guys in on the Grand Strand. And I don't know. It's so funny because people in the Grand Strand. Where
and if
live,
you're a new listener,
people will be like, oh my God, it's so far. It's around the Myrtle Beach area. People. It's like literally it's probably less than a mile.
It's like 1.4 miles.
Well, recall when you lived in a big city, when you lived in Chicago, like, you'd commute for
Well, no, because I lived downtown and I walked everywhere. I lived downtown. I mean, Starbucks was like across the street from my condo. I mean, spoiled.
Well, it's true. In cities, Starbucks is everywhere. Anyways,
yeah,
we digress.
As we usually do.
Money likes direction is our point here.
If you're new to our podcast and you haven't listened to previous, to know us is to know that we will give you some content and you will take some ideas away or not. But it's not very direct. We eventually get there because we're having fun.
There's
squirrels and we just want to have fun and be irreverent. So we're talking about the first time buyer and the importance of educating them of the process so that they understand what to expect, which requires some preparation, Now, I'm getting ready to go on the road. And so there's a couple different ways of prep, a couple different things I need to do in order to prepare. A, I have to prepare for, I'm going to be on the road. What do I need to bring with me? I inevitably always forget something. So I have to like literally make my list, which includes like things that Keith has asked me to bring with me and things I need to give to Keith. So I have to like pack accordingly. But I have to look at my calendar and go, I can't even tell you off the top of my head how many speaking engagements I have. I know I'm speaking for Vistage because I'm a Vistage speaker. So I have 3 Vistage engagements. I'm doing 3 podcasts, maybe 2 for us and 1 for Pivotal Leader. I can't remember. I don't have the calendar in front of me. And then I'm speaking at a women's group. I'm doing 2 lunch and learn sessions. So the bottom line here is I have a ton of things that I'm doing that I have to prepare for, and I need to prepare for those audiences. Who am I getting in front of? Who am I speaking to? What is my message? What is my end goal? And what do I need to bring with me to put in front of them? A lot of times when I go on this kind of business development blitz, I'm doing a lot of speaking, some of which I'm getting paid for, but a lot of is really sales calls, right? If I can get in front of a group of 20 CEOs and do a presentation, I need to be ready to subliminally sell. So there's a lot of stuff that I have to think about, but I really need to know who that audience is before I walk in and show up. So that requires a lot of preparation. So my challenge to our listeners is, what are you doing to prepare yourself to get in front of your audience, to get in front of that sales prospect? Are you doing your homework? Like, for instance, for Vistage, I have a list of the attendees. I know who's going to be in that room. And so I can look them up. I can look them up on LinkedIn. I can look up their companies so that when I'm speaking to them, I'm truly speaking to them. I'm speaking their language. I'm speaking maybe a little bit about their reality and their pain if I understand their industry, because I, you know, specialize in a few different industries, not all, but if I really know a specific industry, oh, I get so excited because I can really talk their talk. That creates a connection. So that's my challenge to everybody is, what are you doing to prepare? So Rachel, what do you do to prepare some of those first-time home buyers? It's a little frustrating, but you have to do extra work.
Sure. Well, that's one reason that I put together the How to Buy a Home Guide, which you can find at theclosingcurve.com, just to get people prepared for what to expect. Because that's the thing that really stumps home buyers and causes fear and anxiety with home buyers, is because they don't know exactly what to expect. Or that it's been a while that they bought a home and they can't remember what to expect. And also, most importantly, a lot of times, buyers get the process, the important steps out of order. Namely, people will look at houses on Zillow and Realtor.com, which is where everybody's looking these days for homes. And they'll do that prior to speaking to a lender and figuring out what they qualify for. It's so very common that people are like, oh, well, I don't want to talk to a lender until I find the house. I don't want to get my credit pinged until I find the right place. And I am working on a first-time home buyer seminar with a prominent lender in the area to help people understand, if you are a serious buyer with a need to purchase a home, you don't have cash, you're going to have to get a mortgage. So you must talk to a lender, and you need to know what you qualify for. And it doesn't negatively affect your credit score to have a lender do an inquiry that one time. It doesn't. That is a big fear for people. They're like, oh, my credit's going to be ruined if I talk to a lender. And it's not true.
But they don't know that. So you have to educate them.
Right. Yeah. And when I was speaking to this lender, I said, that is such a crucial thing. And he did not know this fact. It was interesting because when he's talking to home buyers, they're talking to the right guy. They're talking about the loan. So he didn't even know that there was this whole group of people out there that are afraid to talk to him on some level because they don't want to get their credit pinged and negatively impacted. So he's like, oh, that's crazy. And I'm like, yes, I was a Zillow Premier agent for a while. And I had, you know, all these phone calls from buyers. And I swear it was 9.9 times out of 10 that people said that exact thing. Oh, well, I don't want to talk to a lender until I found the right house because I don't want to have my credit negatively impacted. Like, it was crazy. And so that's what led me to this writing this How to Buy a Home guide and feeling like I really need to take a position of education for people. Because if you do speak to a lender, then you find out sometimes about these things that are affecting your credit in a negative way that you didn't even know about. Like, people sometimes know if you got, you know, a heavy credit card balance or whatever, you know about that, but you might not know about other little things that can be easily solved to improve your credit score by 50 points. And that makes a huge difference. So I have really embraced this rather than, and some people in sales will take this standpoint of like, oh God, they're just so stupid. God, they just don't know. But it's not that they're stupid. They just don't know right. What they don't know, to use that phrase again. And I really am embracing this position of educating people and trying to be really patient and empathetic again with them, because they really do they want to buy a house. Everybody needs somewhere to live. And I think that I can create better relationships with these people by taking a position of educating them and being humble about, okay, yes, I need to start at step one with these people, instead of just rolling my eyes and being like, oh God, they're wasting my time. They're not wasting my time. I'm helping them learn. And it may turn out that they're not ready to buy yet. But when they are ready to buy, they'll be grateful that I helped them learn that.
So in essence, you become a trusted advisor, because you're becoming a consumer advocate, because you're educating them and you're teaching them. And they might not buy right now, but they may, because they find out they're not prepared. They're not, once they listen to you and they realize they're not prepared, and they go, whatever, fix their credit or put more money together or whatever it is that they need to do, they'll come back to you.
Right. And also, things that I take for granted, people don't necessarily know. Another conversation I had yesterday, there's a buyer. They want to move to this area because they have family here. They just put she had literally put her home on the market the day she called me. And it was a referral from a friend. And so I started talking to her and she said, well, we can't buy a home down there until we sell this one. And I said, great. Well, I'm going to send you these homes mostly to get a feel for what you are looking for in a home. And if you see something you're really in love with, then you can make your offer contingent upon the sale of your home. And it's not going to, you're not going to get stuck with two mortgages all of a sudden, because the contingency reads that the purchase of the new home is based on the sale of your existing home. And, you know, you can't get in trouble with it because there's a kick out in there. And she was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. Thank you. Now, okay, cool. And she since has found a home that she really likes. So we may do that. But she just didn't know. And for me, that's such a, like, it happens all the time. So common. But she just didn't know because she hasn't done that before. And it is scary because you're like, oh, but what if my house doesn't sell? Then what? And so then I have to say, well, that's how it's written, is if your house doesn't sell, or if the seller of the home that you want to purchase gets a better offer, then you'll have the opportunity to say, okay, we're going to go for it and buy this home without the contingency of selling ours, or we're going to, you know, back out.
Yeah. And in the training world, when you're dealing with a first time buyer, some of the things that I've had to do is prepare the buyer, meaning they might not be the ultimate decision maker at the end of the day. Someone has to approve it for them. That doesn't mean that they're not highly influential, right? There are a couple different levels of people that I deal with. Typically, I don't really deal with HR too much because they really don't have as much power as maybe the vice president of sales or the COO or the CEO. But even at the vice president of sales level, they're not the ultimate decision maker, right? Someone's got to approve their budget, but I can prepare them to sell it up the chain by giving them the information that they need. And so if they're a first-time buyer, there are things that I need to do, like show them what the potential return on investment is going to be, which is really important to them, which is a hard thing to do, but we have found ways to measure that now with our current clients that we can at least show some of those statistics, or preparing them with giving them some examples of what we might be doing for them, or preparing them by showing them videos of work that we've done. Giving them all of those things so that they can be fully prepared and in control, because the buyer needs to feel like that they're in control of the process. So you have to find ways to make them feel like they're in control of the process.
Right. And we are the guide through the process.
Right. Right. Preparation and education.
Excellent.
It's a short and sweet podcast today. I think we've like really hit the points. I don't even think we need to belabor it anymore.
No.
Any big takeaways for you from this?
Well, a big takeaway would be just, and this is something that I've just learned recently, is, you know, there's a great value in just getting back to basics and taking a stance of humility rather than, oh gosh, because I see this in real estate of like, oh God, they're just so stupid. And just take the stance of what, there's things that you don't know that you don't know. And you wouldn't want to be belittled and condescended for not knowing what you don't know. So treat others with empathy and take that stance of humility and take that stance of being an educator. Because you just, if you, you could enlighten someone and make them just think you are an absolute mm-hmm. rock star. And being a rock star in the eyes of the customer goes, the reach is so long because of all the people that they could refer to you.
Amen to that. And really meeting people where they are and treating people the way they want to be treated. I have a quick flashback to a Vistage talk that I did in Atlanta, and one of the guys in the group, and the Vistage is primarily owners and CEOs who are the members, he said, thank you so much for really like kind of customizing your talk today to where we are. Like, it was obvious that I went off script a little bit with them because that's what they needed me to do. And so that's where the value came in for them. And while it's not I got direct clients from it, I do, when I'm a Vistage speaker, getting really good ratings is important because the people in the room rate you. And so that's my, and I get clients from it, but that was like, I got a super high rating that day because of that, because I met them where they were. So, and that was part of the education piece of it. So that's our
awesome.
That's our episode for today. Short and sweet.
Yeah. And sometimes a quickie is
we are good at quickies. Every now and then, Rachel and I, you can catch us doing quickie tips on our Facebook page at Women Your Mother Warned You About. You can find us on Facebook. And we often take those videos and put them on our YouTube channel, which you can... Well, since they don't let you like really rename your URL for that anymore, you can go to our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, and click on the YouTube icon to see our quickie tip videos, which are like 10 to 15 minutes of us rambling. Sometimes we're pretty, sometimes we're not, but they're fun.
We're always pretty, but sometimes we have more makeup than others.
That's
or
true.
Our hair
we
is
are
better.
Always pretty. Sometimes just makeup, no makeup. You saw me today. Yeah. It's a no makeup day. Yeah. I just rolled out of bed, went to the beach, and then I'm like, oh my God, we're recording. I got to get back.
Yes.
All right. So it's time for us to wrap up. Thank you to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About, where we talked about procrastination and education of your prospects and clients. To connect with me directly, Gina Tremarco, or learn more about Pivot 10 Results or Carolina Improv, you can visit GinaTremarco.com.
And to connect with me, Rachel Tipton, visit theclosingcurve.com where you can find that How to Buy a Home guide. It's free. Or find me on social media as Rachel on Real Estate and find all of our social media links and free downloads for Women Your Mother Warned You About on our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And hey, could you please do us a really big favor and give us a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast? A 5-star rating would do so much for us, and we would really be so appreciative of that. And hey, remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye-bye, Warner. See ya.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.